Blog Talk Radio.
¿Qué pasa, boricuas del mundo? Yo soy Will Santiago Viera y esta es una nueva edición de Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show. Como todos los viernes, le traemos información, cultura y buena música para tu deleite. ¡Pa'lante, boricua! ¡Pa'lante siempre!
¿Cómo están, boricuas del mundo? ¿Todo bien? Espero que estén bien, estén gozando de este viernes calientito. Ya ustedes saben que está en, por lo menos aquí en Nueva York, está un poquito calientito. Hemos tenido un par de días que han estado a 90 grados y claramente ha bajado. Hoy tenemos como 77 grados, pero parece como si tuviera 85 porque hay una humedad bastante grandecita. De todos modos, yo no voy a dar mucho complaint, como decimos nosotros los latinos, porque en el invierno también estamos peleando porque hace mucho frío. Así que yo soy nacido en Puerto Rico y me gusta el calor, y si hay que sudar un poco, pues sudamos. Pierdo un par de libras porque estoy medio pesado de todos modos. Como les dije, este es su show, Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show, y yo soy su anfitrión, Will Santiago Viera. Hoy tenemos un show increíble con un amigo de nuestro show que a cada momento está con nosotros a traernos información. Él se llama Nelson Antonio Dennis, así que lo vamos a tener dentro de un ratito con nosotros. Antes de comenzar el show, quiero pedirles que vayan a nuestras páginas y nos den un like, porque queremos seguir creciendo y queremos que ustedes no solamente escuchen nuestro show, pero también pueden ir a esas páginas y escuchar los shows que han pasado semanas antes. Si pueden ir a la página Boricuas of the World Social Club Talk Show en Facebook, van allá y nos dan un like y se lo agradeceríamos también. También tenemos otra página que le cambiamos el nombre porque tenemos ahora una pequeña publicación que se llama Boricuas of the World Presente y de Pie. Vayan también a esa página, nos da un like. Ahí mismo pueden mirar que tenemos nuestro periódico, en el cual nuestra primera edición tenemos artículos de Jonathan Marcantoni, el que nos trae el libro Boricua del mes, todos los meses, y también de nuestro amigo que está con nosotros, Nelson Antonio Dennis, que tiene un artículo muy bueno. Si no lo han leído, pasen por allí y léanlo. Y claramente vayan a nuestra página de Twitter, Boricuas OT World, y nos da también un seguimiento. Quiero entonces ahora hablar un poquito con mi amigo Nelson Antonio Dennis. Y el que no lo conocen, él era un asambleísta. He's a former assemblyman. He was a director, a film director, by the way. He was also the editorial director for the Diario La Prensa, and of course, you know, he's the author of ese gran libro, A War Against Puerto Rican, that's becoming quite a classic book, a book, a must-have for us boricuas. So, vamos a darle la bienvenida a nuestro hermano, Nelson Antonio Dennis. Nelson, ¿cómo estás tú, mi hermano? How are you?
Well, saludo, Will. Siempre un placer aquí estar contigo. Es siempre como llegar a casa. Gracias por abrir la puerta de nuevo.
No, listen, this is your home, this is the place where you need to be, so as many times as you want, please, you're welcome to come by, and you know, we want to pick your brain. You have one of those brains that is, is there
pickable
for the picking, and we want to pick it.
That is one of the best compliments I've had in a long time. I appreciate it. Yeah,
it's true. It's true. So Nelson, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you to the show was to talk to you a bit about, you know, the situation in Puerto Rico. But before that, I want to talk to you because I learned that you have a new book that should be coming out soon. Can you tell us about the name of that book?
Yeah, you know me, and my friends know that I've been writing for a long time, and so you mentioned that I wrote and directed a film. I've been writing screenplays for over 20 years. This is before the political days, and I wrote a novel called Juan Bobo. And so what you just mentioned is a novel that my agent now has submitted to a number of publishers, and it's the story of Juan. Los puertorriqueños conocemos Juan Bobo. He's a folkloric character, and he's existed, interestingly, he's existed for close to 200 years in Puerto Rico. The top literary review, like the New Yorker magazine, or the Paris Review of Puerto Rico, was by Nemesio Canales, que era familiar de Blanca Canales en Jayuya. Nemesio Canales, who was a Renaissance man. He was a lawyer, a poet, very politically involved. But he had the top literary review was Juan Bobo, which was his magazine. And he wrote a couple of books called Boverías, which were political books. But he was able to get them out even while the FBI was rampant throughout the island, because he ascribed the opinions to Juan Bobo, and so he would call it boberías. So Juan Bobo has been a very quiet anti-authoritarian fixture in Puerto Rico. You know, there's a comparison. You could draw an analogy to Santería, which is a way that a lot of cultures that came from Africa were able to preserve their religion, but they grafted it onto the Catholic saints right under the noses of their masters, right? So that's part of the root. Tú sabes eso de Santería, so they could practice their own religion without arousing the suspicion of the master. Y capoeira, the Brazilian art form, same thing.
Yeah, they allowed them to practice without being prosecuted. I know all about it because who doesn't know or doesn't have a familia que santero? But anyway, go ahead.
Hey, Ma, I was just reading an interesting article today. Que había santería en Doral Bank antes de que se hundió en Puerto Rico. Que había tremendo santero que trajo an alligator into the boardroom para hacer un trabajo ahí. I forget the name of the alligator. Unbelievable.
Wow. Man.
It's a whole thing. I'll send you the link. Well, it's become part of an FBI investigation. I swear.
Wow.
About santero de Doral Bank. Yeah. Juan Bobo is a character that he actually in my book he could be a politician. He's he could be a big shot in Bebrede.
Well, tell us about the plot.
Yeah, well, just like Luis Fortuño or Antonio García Padilla, Juan Bobo has a deceptively honest face, a genius for legitimate fraud, no conscience, a golden tongue, and a feeling that a dollar in someone else's pocket is a personal insult. So, you know, pretty much like a politician. So Juan Bobo starts out with some moral growth to undergo. He's managing a baseball team in Puerto Rico and conducts exorcisms on the side to make ends meet. And an unusual but very, in a sense, very, very Puerto Rican character. He's a man in his element. But as he starts awakening to some of the contradictions in his environment, and he becomes a little more politically aware, he starts getting in trouble. I mean, that's part of becoming aware. So without realizing it, Juan Bobo becomes politicized, and unfortunately for him, that means that people start to die around him. So Juan Bobo has to go on the run. He leaves Puerto Rico, comes to America, but Juan Bobo always como que se está inventando. He becomes a Harvard economist. He becomes a witch doctor, a Pentecostal messiah. And he always, you know, sort of
regular jack of all trades.
Pretty much like Donald Trump. He just he's always staying one step ahead. And in the end, he attracts the attention of the CIA, which is only fitting for an anti-authoritarian Puerto Rican figure. And he basically, in the end, I don't want to give it away, but he becomes absolutely legendary in El Barrio and in Washington Heights. I'll leave it at that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just want to know, why did you write the book?
Well, that's a perfect question. Think about this. You're familiar with, well, some of these, obviously, you'll be familiar with the work of Emile Zola, who wrote about the coal miners' strike in France in the mid-1800s, a beautiful novel called Germinal, G-E-R-M-I-N-A-L. It's been translated into dozens of languages, Emil Zola. You may have heard of Wallace Soyinka, his play Master Harold and the Boys, or Chinua Achebe's novel Things Fall Apart, or here in the United States, Upton Sinclair wrote a novel called The Jungle about the stockyards and the meatpacking industry in Chicago, Upton Sinclair, or Harriet Beecher Stowe, Uncle Tom's Cabin. I'll give you some more recent examples. The movies, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, right? Or the play A Raisin in the Sun, both of them are Sidney Poitier. The point that I'm getting at is sometimes cuando hay un tranque cultural y político, when there is an absolute, it's like a checkmate, and information is not being shared. Like Pedro Albizu Campos, he had to try to engineer an entire revolution to get the word out of Puerto Rico for the world to listen. Two nationalists have to come up here to try to to deal with Harry Truman before the newspapers started acknowledging that the revolution was not just an incident between Puerto Ricans, that was the way they were trying to call it. So what I'm getting at here is in all these examples I'm giving you, where Puerto Rico is now, I've written 16 articles, essays about the Financial Control Board over the last 8 months. I think you've read most of them. We know each other, the people from A Call to Action, David Galarza, but in a sense, it's like we're preaching to the choir, and we need to get this message to a broader audience. We have to reach those, it's like in a political campaign, you have to reach the swing voters. So what I noticed is that War Against All Puerto Ricans was the best-selling book in Puerto Rico, and that's absolutely critical. But where it also needs to be understood is in Washington, D.C., and here in the United States, in this culture. So a big dimension of my writing and completing Juan Bobo is because I want to bring what's happening in Puerto Rico to the larger American audience. And there was a quote that I always remember from George Bernard Shaw. He said, if you're going to teach someone, before you teach them, you must first entertain them. Otherwise, they'll kill you. It's a rather dramatic quote. But the point that he's getting at is sometimes you have to sugarcoat the pill in order to get people to pay attention. And so, La Cosa de Puerto Rico, we all know, we know about the Jones Act and the theft of 80% of the land and the 40% currency devaluation. We've known that. We go over it and over it. But you try to explain. I've done this. I mean, I get into conversations with people, and they listen, but I can see their eyes starting to glaze over midway through the conversation. And they're listening, and the conversation ends, and they say, wow, that's really awful. That's really something. And then they go about their lives. And then, it was in one year and not the other. So what I'm doing with Juan Bobo is encapsulating and embedding all these conflicts and all these cultural pieces about Puerto Rico into a story that is very entertaining. It's sort of in the tradition of El Lazarillo de Tormes, which was the first picaresque novel in España many, many years ago.
That's what I wanted to ask
500 years ago. There's a tradition.
Do you have historical antecedents or literary tradition
that the
book would fall into?
Yeah, there's a historical antecedent for this. There's what's called the picaresque tradition. Don Quixote de la Mancha falls into that. So definitely El Lazarillo de Tormes. It was written anonymously, published in around 1550 in Spain during the Spanish Inquisition, and anonymously because they would have chopped off the author's head. But it's an extremely entertaining. You can buy it on Amazon or it's El Lazarillo de Tormes. Many consider it the first modern novel, that book. And it traveled throughout Europe like wildfire. And what it did is it got people to pay attention to the Spanish Inquisition that was happening in Spain. And so that is one of the virtues. And you've heard the aphorism that the pen is mightier than the sword. Well, this is one of those cases where I'm hoping that, I've done with War Against All Puerto Ricans. We've created the information is there, the foundation is there. But I noticed that unless we engage the entire American public, it can almost be like the sound of one hand clapping. So Juan Bobo is, in a sense, is that other hand, so that other audiences and a broader American audience can start to becoming engaged with Puerto Rico. So that was a big part of why I wrote it.
Wouldn't that be a daunting task?
Yeah, it's daunting, but, you know, these things take on a life of their own. I'll give you, here's an example. 2 years ago, who would have thought if you talk to Lin-Manuel Miranda, and he's got this thing, says, I want to do a play with guys wearing tight pants, and it's about this Alexander Hamilton, and we would have listened, and we say, oh, that's really interesting. But who would have thought what Hamilton would become, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you have a very
strong
concept and a very real clear sense of the mission, and you do a good job, I mean, it can't, you know, I mean, the bottom line is it has to be good, otherwise people mm-hmm. you know, put down the book or turn the channel. So, but mm-hmm. if you do something that is engaging and it really grabs people, then it picks up. It becomes more than what you thought. And what mm-hmm. thought could happen, you know?
So you gave me a brief little, you know, piece on Juan Bobo, but what is the history of Juan Bobo in Puerto Rico, really?
Well, Juan Bobo is in that tradition, right, of the trickster, the troublemaker, the person that you think you... I think an analogy will be Cantinflas in Mexico. That's actually a really good one, too. Or a little bit, maybe like Alcalde de Machuchal, a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm. My
but
favorite.
Juan Bobo has, Alcalde, great, man. I know, Adalberto, él era una persona bien, bien inteligente. If you listen to him talk, he was a very intelligent
man. Honestamente, sí lo era.
Lo mismo que el Negrón, what was the name of Cantinflas in real life? He's a smart guy.
Anyway.
Negrón o Negrete. Anyway, in Puerto Rico, Juan Bobo has existed for close to 200 years. As I said, the top literary magazine in Puerto Rico was called Juan Bobo. There's hundreds of children's stories and children's books that have been written in both languages, mostly English and Spanish, over these, basically since about the 1800s, the 1800s, 1850s. Mm-hmm. There's plays. In Dora the Explorer, they had a Juan Bobo character. It's just part. It's so much a part of the culture that it's onomatopoeia. You go if you mm-hmm. say if someone does something, mira, no seas tan bobo, no seas como Juan Bobo. So it's become, you know, it's so much a part of our culture.
I used to call
Juan Bobo
when I was a kid. My mother used to call me Juan Bobo.
So All right, so there
listen,
it is. But
where's the book now?
Sometimes
does
we have
a
cultural treasure.
Or a publisher? I'm sorry?
Yeah, I have an agent. Yeah. Well, I was saying sometimes we have a cultural treasure, but we don't realize it because we're so familiar with it. I mean, it's right in front of us. It's
mm-hmm.
something that we have every day, and we almost don't realize it. So Juan Bobo, for me, is a perfect vehicle for exemplifying the Puerto Rican spirit and bringing it out into the mainland in a way that hopefully will engage the attention. And I've written the underlying screenplay, so, you know, if it goes in that direction,
yeah,
we're ready for that as well. So that's it. I mean, we're taking a principal, archetypical character from Puerto Rico and giving him life. You know that, se me olvidó el nombre, por muchacho que está haciendo the comic book, the Superwoman comic book, the Boricua.
Yeah,
comic
I'm not
book
up on my
doing...
names recently, but I
yeah.
know exactly who you're
great
talking
guy.
About.
So he's doing, you know, in that same vein, to sort of reinvent and reinvigorate some of the symbolism that exists. But Juan Bobo, he didn't have to be reinvented. He's such a powerful, iconic figure.
Yeah, he's a big part of the fiber of Puerto Rico. And again, like you said, many people don't really realize that, you know, what he was about. Just people know that they used to be called Juan Bobo. Oye, mira, Juan Bobo, ven aquí. But, you know, people didn't know who this character was. But anyway, I asked you if you have an agent and a publisher for this book, and I'm kind of curious about that.
So the agent, Well, the agent submitted it to, yes, I have an agent, and the agent submitted it to a number about a week and a half ago, and we'll be hearing back from them. They have to read it. So we'll see what the how the response is, and hopefully we'll get a good publishing deal. And for me, you know, what's the most important is actually the print run, the advance, obviously, because you want to be paid, but the print run, the number of books that are printed in the beginning, so that you don't have to go back to reprint. Bueno Que Me Sucedió with War Against All Puerto Ricans. It was nowhere near what it should have been, the initial print run. So they kept having to reprint, or emergency reprints that kept selling out in Puerto Rico, which is nice. It's nice when you sell out, but it's a lot better when the books are there.
I went down a couple of times.
When I went down to on a promotional tour for War Against Puerto Ricans twice in Puerto Rico, the book would sell out, and we couldn't find it. You know, people would say, "Oh, we want the book." Guess what? It sold out 2 days after you got here. So I kept telling the publisher, "Hey, man, you got to publish, you know, print more in the beginning."
But I think they're warned. They will be warned now, knowing the history of the first book and how it turned out. But that was my question. How are things going with War Against All Puerto Ricans?
Well, it's been really steady. There was an initial kind of explosive reaction in Puerto Rico because El Nuevo Día did several pieces on it, and there was a lot of radio, and then it just tapped into what was happening economically. And entonces El Partido Independentista brought me back, and we went to they did an eight-city tour. So what happened is it became the best-selling book in Puerto Rico for the last entire year. It outsold everything. There's a newspaper article. I sent it to you. En El Nuevo Día, you know, están leyendo. They had a list of the 25 bestsellers, and War Against All Puerto Ricans was the most selling book. It outsold Harry Potter and the Children of whatever it is, the latest Harry Potter. It outsold To Kill a Mockingbird, at least for this year. So it's done great, and then there's now interest in making it into a film. The actor Luis Guzmán, because I spoke with him, he sent an email, he's very interested. So there's growing interest, and I have an agent for that. I have a screenplay agent out in L.A., and we'll see. If that happens, then obviously they're going to have to reprint the book a whole lot more.
But that's a good thing.
The timing is something. You know, with the Financial Control Board and with everything that's happening in Puerto Rico right now, you can see, Will, you can understand it's funny how information is a power unto itself. And imagine if we had a really big, serious, historical drama movie of Don Pedro Albizu Campos and the revolution of 1950 and, you know, basically, the war against all Puerto Ricans, the way the book is written, that would go a long way for the world to understand what Puerto Rico has gone through and how it came to this situation now. You can write editorials, you know, over and over, people don't understand. But when you have a movie and they sit down and they get caught, you know, some people say that the movie Braveheart, Mel Gibson's Braveheart, that it had a lot to do with Scotland reconsidering becoming independent all over again. The movie, you know, when they went and saw the movie. So I'm hoping that we get to that point where, you know, Washington did what it was gonna do. But it was becoming increasingly clear that the lobbyists were controlling the situation, and that you could see the way the GOP was handling the public hearings for the Promesa bill. You could tell. And each time that the Promesa bill came back, it came back worse, not better. And then when we finally had Alejandro García Padilla sending letters to all 100 U.S. senators and then personally going to Washington to lobby on behalf of the bill, when you get to that point, well, you know that the fix is in. I mean,
That's another war against all Puerto Ricans, you know, in essence. And the thing is that what annoys me is that I hate to check. I'm constantly looking for information because, of course, at these pages and this show, I want to have information to bring to the people. many people are now, people with big money are going to Puerto Rico to buy houses, to buy land, and they're paying cheap prices for these properties. That's really annoying. One thing that was weird, I can't remember exactly where I read it, but remember when we talked about the fact that these folks on the board can accept gifts? I read somewhere that it said that the people that have these hedge funds are worried because it may look bad.
It may look bad that people will receive gifts.
That people will receive gifts, and they tried to explain it away by saying that when people don't get paid and people on this board will not get paid, you know, usually that's a clause that is put in so that they can, you know, somehow get office equipment and this and that sort of thing. That's how they explained it away, but that the hedge fund managers are thinking that
Puerto Rico, that doesn't explain it away because Puerto Rico is being charged over $300 million for the operating expenses of the Financial Control Board. That was one of the amendments that Bob Menendez was trying to get in there, that Puerto Rico shouldn't have to pay for a Financial Control Board being imposed from Washington, D.C. So that's not true. There's over $300 million that are being appropriated specifically for the operational expenses of the Financial Control Board. No, they'll be unpaid, yeah. But as far as staff and renting the offices and buying the and all that stuff, that is more than the appropriations are entirely made for that. Puerto Rico is on the hook for that money, over $300 million. So if the hedge fund said that, they were just lying.
Yeah, that's what the article said, and for the longest I've been racking my head trying to remember where it is that I read it because I wanted to keep it, but I guess I got doing something else and I lost the article. But anyways, so it was approved by the Congress. It was signed by the President of the United States.
Yeah, they fast tracked it.
Now
very
what?
Much, very
now
quickly.
What? They're even talking about getting Pataki a seat on that board.
I've heard his name, yeah. I've heard a few different names. An ex-bankruptcy judge. At one point I heard Fortuño. Fortuño then quickly disavowed that, but it is clear that what Fortuño wants to do is he wants to be behind the scenes orchestrating many of the deals that get put together. And then, of course, Steptoe & Johnson, his law firm, can do the legal work, and he can continue being the principal behind-the-scenes advisor creating, and Pierluisi is going to do that too. His wife created a financial advisory firm called, I think it's called Multicultural Solutions, Multicultural Capital is the name of it. Well, their billings now are in the millions. She made that little advisory firm within 2 weeks of Pierluisi getting elected to resident commissioner. She created that, and amongst her clients are many of the hedge funds that are active in Puerto Rico that are going to be dealing with the Financial Control Board. In fact, she lobbied Pierluisi. She lobbied Pierluisi on behalf of one of those hedge funds. So, I mean, that's clearly a conflict of interest. Let's say
yes,
so you
yes.
have Pierluisi doing that. You have Fortuño all set up. And if you ask me, while García Padilla was out in Congress, meeting with the Congress people to persuade them to vote for the bill, he was meeting with the senators, it was right during that week that his party submitted the privatization of the beaches bill, and that passed by a vote of 44-1. Both PPD and PNP voted for it outrageous. I mean, 44-1. The one that voted against, he's not running for re-election. So,
but they're pulling
that
back,
you know, everyone,
right?
They pulled it back, but look at how it happened. Think of the moral implications of having done that. The fact that the Puerto Rican legislature opened that door, and the fact that both PPD and PNP overwhelmingly voted for it, and there were 44-1. There's 51 people in the legislature, right?
Yeah, what's
so
in these people's
one
minds?
Voted against. Well, let me finish. One voted against. Six people declared themselves absent. Those six people are the ones that have beaches, long stretches of beaches in their districts. So they, in other words, so that they couldn't have problems with their constituents when they privatized the beaches, they were given, say, they culparon, and they were allowed to be absent. The person that sponsored the bill, the one that introduced it, the one that, you know, brought the bill to the table is the legislator, the PPD legislator from Carolina, which is where Tito Kayak has been fighting him for the last 12 years over the Marriott Hotel.
Yeah.
So they had him because he is so tan fregado with the public in Puerto Rico as far as beaches that they said, you know, you're already fucked up with on your beach reputation is zero. You know, whatever the beach lobby in Puerto Rico obviously hates you. So you're the one that's going to submit this bill. So that's how well coordinated it was, Will. And it was so well coordinated, they did it on the last day of session, towards the end of the day, thinking that people wouldn't read the bill and understand what was going on. And then the next day was the last day of session in the Senate. And so, yes, Bill, Will, it was pulled, but that's just one of two scenarios. Scenario one was when I heard about it, Salvador Tio called me from Puerto Rico that same night, and I changed my blog and I did a new piece, and that's the one that went out. I got over 320,000 views, Will, over 320,000 views in 24 hours on that piece. And so obviously people shared this information. 300. And so one thing that may have happened is there was such a huge outcry. Tito Kayak then went and he climbed the flagpole on the Capitol building and put up his own flag saying "Save Our Beaches" on that day.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that might have happened is they pulled it because they saw they got caught red-handed. That's option one. Option two is that they always intended to pull it, that they just wanted to break the ground for the Financial Control Board, and that they achieved it. And here's the point I'm making, that I told you that you see that Pierluisi and Fortuna are already comfortably positioned to make money off this Financial Control Board by setting up a lot of private placement, public-private partnerships, the P3s, that you know, that's probably what's going to be coming out of this Financial Control Board, that when Puerto Rico can't pay, when PREPA and PRASA and the different agencies can't pay, they will put that into receivership and convert that debt into a P3, a 30-year franchise owned by Solomon Brothers, whoever the hedge fund is, where they get that money for 30 days. So they turn that agency into basically an ATM for 30 years. Okay. And so how does Garcia Padilla get in on that? Well, the way they did it is they broke the ground with the beaches, because now when the Financial Control Board comes in, they don't have to they're not the bad guy. They're not the ones that opened that door. The Puerto Rican legislature already opened that door for them and thereby gave them that sort of moral permission to enter, because, you know, that's going to be one of the greater sources of revenue in Puerto Rico is – is a tourism and John Paulson, and you know, turning it into, you know, the Virgin Islands or, you know, that kind of an economy.
There's a hedge fund manager who said that, and I apologize, I interrupted, but there's a hedge fund manager that was quoted as saying that Puerto Rico in the next 10 years is going to be the next Miami, and that scares the heck out of me.
Yeah, and John Paulson got quoted saying that Puerto Rico is going to be the next Singapore. So they all have their, you know, they're very clear on the way that they're going to configure that economy and basically turn it into. Remember I don't know if you saw the movie with Matt Damon, Elysian Fields, Elysium, where the really rich people go into some place, a bucolic, perfect environment for them, and then everyone else gets screwed. Well, that's what they're looking to turn Puerto Rico into, a playground for the rich. And that privatization of those beaches, that's going to be a big revenue stream, because John Paulson has poured $2 billion into Puerto Rico. Nicholas Prouty has the largest marina in the Caribbean, the Puerta de Tierra area. And the Roosevelt Rose has resort is going to be 3,000 acres, 3,000 acres of redevelopment. So there's going to be billions of and Obama created what's called a promise zone in the eastern slice of Puerto Rico, basically in like Wrangell's empowerment zone. They created a set of incentives and federal cutting bureaucratic red tape to make it more possible, more feasible for the developers to get all their projects done and to get tax incentives. So all of that is extremely attractive to who? To the PPD and PNP, porque ahora se le terminó el guiso. They don't have the patronage. It's gone. So what I think is what they're doing is it's a paradigm shift. They're radically reorienting their allegiances to these billionaires because that's where they see the economic future for themselves as political parties.
Yeah. What I'm afraid of is el yunque. Are they going to sell this to the yunque to developers and in and around the yunque? This scares the heck out of me.
Well, it's not entirely inconceivable. Because, as an example, one of the people on the Natural Resources Committee in Congress, and that's the committee that has disposition over natural wildlife preserves, at least as far as Congress goes, he wanted to reinstate Vieques, the bombing in Vieques, in order to, to reinvigorate the Puerto Rican economy. And then another congressman was saying, "What you might hear this a few times, multi-use." That's a euphemism, just like public-private partnership, P3.
Yeah.
Because public-private partnership is basically putting Puerto Rico into your pocket, and they call it a P3.
Mm-hmm.
Well, multi-use is where – single-use is where El Yunque is a rainforest, and that's all it is. Multi-use is where they could put up a hotel, a zoo, a condominium, whatever, and turn it into what they call a multi-use facility. Well, what they basically mean is opening it up to developers. And so that is legislation that they've been pushing a number of developers, and you might be seeing that coming through the Financial Control Board. So it is an important time to look carefully at the Financial Control Board, basically as a Soviet Politburo. It really, they used to have a Kremlin watch, but we need to have a Financial Control watch to see what kind of projects they're trying to push into Puerto Rico.
Wow. It's getting weirder and weirder. And, I'm beginning to think that eventually people are going to begin to think that, hey, maybe the best alternative would be to become a state. They're going to push the people so far into oblivion that they're going to begin to think that the best strategy would be to become a state. It scares me, brother.
Yeah, but
it scares me.
But that is an odd one.
And my family.
That's odd.
Hmm?
Yeah, but that's odd if you think about it, because that's equivalent to, let's say a person has been abusing his girlfriend for, 20 years, right? I mean, really abuse. I mean, punching or hitting her. You know, she's got everything. She's lucky he hasn't gone to jail, for life. And this woman, the girlfriend, her solution to that is, you got to put a ring on it. I want to marry you. I mean, isn't that the analogy? I mean, how could we? I would think that people would say, you know what, you've abused us too much to the point where the last thing I want to do is get with you.
Yeah, but Nelson,
right?
the problem in Puerto Rico was that people got somewhat dormant by the fact that le dieron los cupones and tenían un trabajito until they changed the law and companies left, so estaban acostumbrados a eso. And so a lot of the older folks that I've spoken to, me dicen, no, Puerto Rico no debe de dejar a los Estados Unidos, no debe, I mean, they're still stuck on being a part of the United States. And sometimes old habits are hard to beat, Perhaps the younger generation.
The new generation will have, because I think they see things more clearly, because for the 40 or 50 years, people have been thinking we're getting the best of both worlds, right? That was the idea. We're getting, the federal benefits, but then we can do our thing over here. Now people are realizing at least this is a brave new world. Now we're getting nothing from either world. Because this Financial Control Board means we're no longer un Estado Libre Asociado. That's gone. Plus,
the decision by the Supreme Court, I think it's helpful to us, because we can go like we did to the United Nations and say, listen, they said it, not us. They said it.
Yeah.
So. We're concerned to use that. I'm pulling straws here, but
yeah. I'll wrap it up with this, maybe, because I know that we have to be careful on your time on the show. But we have to. I think, and I don't want to be arrogant, giving opinions from 1,000 miles away. But I think there's a simple piece here, and that is there has to be a reevaluation of the values. If we're too dependent on American television, American products, the American way of life, in a sense.
Yeah.
We're a colony, even if we call ourselves independent. So I think
yeah.
it is a reestablishment, to revisit the values, to start with agriculture again, to start basically rediscovering the island, rediscover the beauty of that island, and to whatever extent, ignore the United States, ignore the television, turn the television off, start walking instead of driving your cars. Changing the way of life is the best way of becoming independent, and that's what I think
yeah.
has to happen.
Yeah, then definitely.
Yeah.
Something has to happen. Anyway, bueno, pues muchas gracias, Nelson. I really appreciate you coming to my show and
yeah,
letting
well,
us know about
yeah.
your book, your new book,
yeah.
your old book.
Well, thank you.
And
go ahead, Will.
So I really appreciate you coming and letting us know you know, your take, giving us your take on Puerto Rico as well. You know, you are a source for us because, you know, I think that you're on top of that more than many other people that I know. So I really appreciate you coming to
sure.
to our show.
I think
sure.
the listeners should know that because you're too modest about this. The music that we were hearing at the beginning of this show, the listeners should know that was Will Vieira playing all the instruments. So people out there, you need to know that that's all Will. He's like the Mozart, and people don't know it.
Well,
so congratulations on the music, Will.
Thank you. I've been a musician since I was 8 years old. So, you know, I'm an old fogey stogie. And I have a song that I will play for you as we go, as we leave. It's called Faded Thrills. And I wrote this about 6 months ago. People have asked me to play my music, and I will. But again, I thank you, Nelson, for being here with us. Again, when that book comes out, I want you to come here. And whenever you want, if you want to keep us updated on the situation in Puerto Rico, we'd be more than glad to have you. So, que la pasen bien,
Absolutely.
Mi hermano. Como siempre, de corazón,
right.
pa'lante. Mi gente, que la pasen bien. Los dejo con una cancioncita que escribí hace como 6 meses, como le dije. Se titula Faded Thrills. And it's kind of like a ballad. You know, I'm going to end the night with something a little slow, but it's beautiful. Check it out. Que la pasen bien, mi gente. Recuerden, como siempre les digo, para saber dónde vamos, tenemos que saber de dónde venimos. Bye-bye.